ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो चैप्टर 7। Chapter entitled, sorry, 7th canto, chapter 1, entitled, The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone, text 8. Jayakale, Jayakale tu sattvasya, Devarshin rajaso suran, तमसो यक्षरक्षांसि तत्कालानुगुणो भजत। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When the quality of goodness is prominent, the sages and demigods flourish with the help of that quality, with which they are infused and surcharged by the Supreme Lord. Similarly, when the mode of passion is prominent, the demons flourish. And when ignorance is prominent, the yakshas and rakshasas flourish. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart, fostering the reactions of sattva-guna, Rajoguna and Tamoguna. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to anyone. The conditioned soul is under the influence of the various modes of material nature, and behind material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one's victory and loss under the influence of Sattva-guna, Rajoguna and Tamoguna are reactions of these modes, not of the Supreme Lord's partiality. Srila Jiva Goswami, in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, has clearly said, Sattvadayo nu santishe yatracha prakrita gunaha sa shuddhaha sarva shuddhebhyaha puman adya prasidatu. Ladini sandhini samvit tvayeka sarvasamsthitau lada tapakari mishra tvayino gunavarjite. According to this statement of the Bhagavat Sandarbha, the Supreme Lord, being always transcendental to the material qualities, is never affected by the influence of these qualities. The same characteristic is also present in the living being. But because he is conditioned by material nature, even the pleasure potency of the Lord is manifested in the conditioned soul as troublesome. In the material world, the pleasure enjoyed by the conditioned soul is followed by many painful conditions. For instance, we have seen that in the two great wars which were conducted by the Rajo and Tamoguna, both parties were actually ruined. The German people declared war against the English to ruin them. But the result was that both parties were ruined. Although the Allies were apparently victorious, at least on paper, actually neither of them were victorious. Therefore, it should be concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to anyone. Everyone works under the influence of various modes of material nature, and when the various modes are prominent, the demigods or demons appear victorious under the influence of these modes. Everyone enjoys the fruits of his qualitative activities. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 14, chapter 14, 11 to 13th verse. Sarvadvareshu deheesmin prakasha upajayate jnanam yada tada vidyat vivruddham sattvam ityuta lobha pravrittirarambha karmanam ashamah spriha rajasyetani jayante vivruddhe bharatarshabha aprakasho pravrittischa pramado moha evacha tamasyetani jayante vivruddhe kurunandana. The manifestation of the modes of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, uncontrollable desire, hankering, and intense endeavor develop. O son of Kuru, when there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, madness, illusion, inertia, and darkness are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart, simply gives the results of the increase in the various qualities. But he is impartial. He supervises victory and loss, but he does not take part in them. The various modes of material nature do not work all at once. The interactions of these modes are exactly like seasonal changes. Sometimes there is an increase in increment of Rajoguna, sometimes of Tamoguna, and sometimes Sattvaguna. Generally, the demigods are surcharged with Sattvaguna, and therefore when the demons and the demigods fight, the demigods are victorious because of the prominence of their Sattvaguna qualities. However, this is not the partiality of the Supreme Lord. Jayakale tu sattvasya devarshin rajaso asuran tamaso yaksharakshansi tatkalan guno bhajat. When the quality of goodness is prominent, the sages and demigods flourish with the help of that quality with which they are infused and surcharged by the Supreme Lord. Similarly, when the mode of passion is prominent, the demons flourish. And when ignorance is prominent, the yaksha and rakshasas flourish. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart, fostering the reactions of sattva, raja and tamoguna. So in this chapter, Srila Suta Goswami is replying to the question of the confusion that has arisen about the dealings of the Lord. Is it really partial or is he impartial? Because Krishna says in the Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Namedveshu Stinam Priya, that I am equal to all. I hate no one and nobody is very dear to me. In this world, some people are very dear to us. Them we call as friends. And some we hate, some we don't like, or some we are fearful of. Then we call as enemies. So generally people try to impose the same thinking even in the Supreme Lord, when apparently he seems to favor the demigods and defeat the asuras or facilitate their annihilation. And therefore this question is raised, and very thoroughly, completely, the answer is given here, and the whole seventh canto follows about the Lord's dealing. We love our friends and we hate or fear our enemies. But who's a friend? At least in the material world it said, a friend in need is a friend indeed. So, we being so insignificant and a part of a huge system, we are completely dependent on so many things. Physical, on a physical platform, biologically, emotionally, spiritually. Without help, we can't even survive, to speak of advancing. And therefore, anyone who facilitates, we are very much favorably disposed to them, and our dealings with them are very nice. But the Lord is in every way completely independent, Swarat. He is not dependent on anyone for anything. Spiritually also is Atmaram. He is self-satisfied. So what is there a need? Why does he need a friend? Every need of his is fulfilled in his own self. It's a fact. There's nothing outside of himself. Now, all his desires, all his needs are met by his own self. So he's not obliged to someone to have that kind of a dealing. And because we are so insignificant, anyone who acts in a way that is unpleasant to our senses, unpleasant to our mind, or somehow very unpleasant to the ego, we perceive them as our enemies, irrespective of whether it is beneficial or not beneficial. Sometimes it is beneficial, and sometimes it may not be beneficial. But honestly, we see, or when we are very insecure, we start fearing that somebody can hurt me or stop from getting what I want. But in case of the Supreme Lord, why should he envy someone? Asama urdhva. There is no one equal to him, and there is no one above him. Everyone is absolutely dependent upon him. So why should he hate someone? Why should he fear someone? So in this way, we see that foolishly, covered by the three modes, when we try to understand the qualities and the activities of the Lord, we perceive them as being friendly to someone or being hateful or fearful of someone, being partial to someone. What to speak of understanding the Lord's impartiality by studying those living entities who have overcome the influence of the three modes of material nature by being connected with the Lord in devotion. If we scrutinizingly study their lives, if we observe the qualities which is manifested by their dealings and their activities with respect to other living entities, even then we can get an understanding of the impartiality of the Lord. Because a living entity is qualitatively being part of the Lord. Quantity may be very insignificant, but qualitatively being equal to the Lord. As soon as he is removed of the three modes of nature, the qualities and the activities that manifest are one in terms of quality with the Lord. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Yudhishthira Maharaj comes to know of the child in the womb of Uttara, their only heir to the throne, because Draupadi's five sons are already killed, he is very much happy, and he invites Jataka Kovidaha. He, just at the time of birth of Parikshit Maharaj, invites astrologer, famous astrologers, to study and forecast, to get a forecast of what kind of child is this boy going to be, and will he continue the honor of the dynasty of the Kurus. So the astrologers come, study, and they give him two names, Vishnu Ratha, because even before he was born, he was protected by Vishnu of the thunderbolt or the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama. Therefore, it says Vishnu Ratha. The other name is Parikshit, because he will examine every living entity to find out whether is this the person whom I saw when I was in the womb of my mother, who came to protect me. And by this examination, by this remembrance, he will be 100% Krishna conscious. Right from day one, even minus day one in the womb. So, because he was always, he has the original and comparing. Is this the one? Is this the one? The reference point is always there. So Parikshit Maharaj is another example of Smaranam. He's always remembering the Lord and examining everyone in relationship to the Lord whom he had seen. And therefore he was a pure devotee right from day one. So, there they describe certain qualities of what a powerful personality emperor will he be, and what will be the qualities that he will exhibit. They say there's so many wonderful, if someone wants to give a seminar on leadership, Vedic leadership, they can study these qualities in the 12th chapter of the first canto, where amazing qualities of a state administrative head is very beautifully brought out. It is said, amongst great bowmen, this child will be as good as Arjuna in fighting. He will be as irresistible as fire. He will be as unsurpassable as ocean. Mrigendra iva vikrantaha. Vikranta means powerful. As strong as a lion. And Prabhupada explains, the lion is very strong in chasing an enemy, and it never fails in the chase. Similarly, the head of the state should never fail in chasing an enemy. Then immediately Prabhupada says, one should be a lamb at home and a lion in the chase, not vice versa. Nishevyo himavaniva. As worthy a shelter as the Himalayan mountains. A very beautiful explanation is given by Prabhupada that the Himalayan mountains are famous for all richness. They provide any man who is not materially prosperous can take shelter and will be provided with everything necessary, everything required. Even a beggar, literally, can go to the Himalayas and for the rest of his life live happily, provided by all the needs, and if he takes shelter of the Himalayas. There are beautiful caves to reside. There's fresh spring water to quench your thirst. There are beautiful fruits, trees, you know, to satisfy your hunger. And so many herbs to protect you from being sick. Everything you need is provided. And not only for the materialist, even for the spiritualist, the needs are provided. That like the Himalayas, as complete shelter as the Himalayas. Titikshavaha vasudha iva, as forbearing as the earth. And Prabhupada explains, on the surface of the earth, so many disturbances are caused by inhabitants, including detonating atomic bombs. But earth is forbearing like a mother who excuses a little child. Sahishnu pitarau iva, as tolerant as parents. Parents are always tolerant of children's mischievous acts. One time I was coming by the train. Right opposite was this huge lady. She had at least three children. All very few months differences. And each was as mischievous as you can imagine. Somebody was climbing on her head and pulling her cheeks out. And somebody's on the shoulder of somebody. And she's still talking to someone. Absolutely, nobody can speak in that such a state of mind. Well, unconcerned. Probably she's got used to it. Just amazing how I was thinking, God, this is tolerance. Practically unconcerned. Samye pitamaha samaha. Like grandfather Yudhishthir or Bhishma, Brahma, in equanimity of mind. two pitamahas. If you say pitamaha of the whole universe, that is Brahma. But if you say pitamaha of Maharaj Parikshit, that is Maharaj Yudhishthir. So in both cases, Brahma or Yudhishthir, the comparison is equally good, because both are recognized representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how they have to maintain mental equanimity being engaged in the welfare work for living being. Very nice point. That if you are engaging in the welfare work of the living being, you have to have mental equanimity. Any responsible executive agent at the top of administration has to tolerate different type of onslaughts from the very persons for whom he works. And the highest example is given of one great exalted pure devotee blaming another pure devotee of the Lord. If Brahmaji was criticized by gopis, the highest perfectional devotees of the Lord, for creating eyelids which obstruct their seeing Krishna. Gopis are the most exalted devotees. Brahmaji is our founder Acharya. And they're criticizing. Just imagine Brahma, poor Brahma, trying to please the Lord, such an onerous task of creating the whole universe exactly as Krishna wants it. perfectly. No mistakes. After deep realization, after being empowered by the Lord to do everything. And then the gopis say, what kind of a foolish creator is he? What kind of eyelid he has made? Blinks every few moments. There is a story amongst the GBCs. Once a king had a donkey, an ass, which had the very funny habit of just moving its head vertically, up and down, and not in any other way. So the king wanted to somehow make sure that the donkey moves his head some other way. So he announced, he said, anyone who makes this donkey's head move in any other way, I'll give you half of my kingdom. So many people desirous of getting some piece of estate, what to speak of how the kingdom, came and tried all techniques. Somehow the donkey just would move his head only up and down, vertically. Then a sadhu came. He was an ISKCON GBC. And he just whispered something into the ear of the donkey. And the donkey immediately, vigorously started shaking left and right, left and right. After that, he never stopped the other, he never, you know, did the previous one. So the king said, I'll give you, but tell me, what mantra you chanted in the ear of this ass? Of course, it was not the Mahamantra. He said, I asked him, do you want to be the GBC? Damned if you do, damned if you don't. So, Prasade Girisho Upamaha. Munificent like the Lord of Kailash, Lord Shiva. Shiva is celebrated as a demigod who awards gifts to beggars. Anyone who comes to him, asks anything, is going to give. Therefore, he's called Ashutosh, one who is very quickly pleased. He's also called Bhutanath, the Lord of common folk, who are mainly attached to him because of his munificent gifts. Not that they love him too much, but what he can give. Even without consideration of after effects. He's so munificent, he doesn't even consider many a times the after effects. The excellent point is that Shiva never denies anyone any sort of gift. Therefore, he is most generous. Although sometimes some kind of a mistake is made. You know the story of Vrikasur. So in this way, and then Ashraya Sarabhutanam Yatha Devo Ramashraya, resort of everyone like Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, who's even shelter of the Goddess of Fortune. In this way, so many qualities are described. And then he says, Sarva Sadguna Mahatme Krishnam Anuvrataham. Almost as good as Lord Krishna by following in his footsteps. Almost as good as Lord Krishna by following in his footsteps. So the point that I'm trying to make is, to the extent, what was Parikshit Maharaj's attitude? His only attitude was how he could serve Krishna. And in that service, in trying to serve with different kind of living entities, his dealings were different, externally speaking. But the underlying principle was always serving in a way that can help that living entity in the service of the Lord come closer to the Lord. So if you are at the receiving end, then you may perceive it as sometimes facilitating someone, helping someone, chastising someone, punishing someone. It is seen like that. But the attitude is simply one of how to serve best, how to serve that entity the best way, according to whatever quality, according to whatever position I have. Even Vidura, there's a beautiful verse, when Vidura returns, when he's insulted by Duryodhan, just before the battle of Kurukshetra, Vidura, seeing it as a mercy, as mercy of the Lord, he just leaves for Tirtha Yatra, for pilgrimage. In fact, that's the reason actually he's been relieved from Yamaraj's post for some time. But he falls into terrible politics even here. So Krishna's arrangement, he gets relief from that also. Seeing it as a blessing of the Lord, he just uses that to travel 30 long years. 30 long years he travels. And in his travels, he hears about passing away of Krishna, about Krishna winding up his pastimes and leaving along with the Yadus. And then he goes, meets Uddhava. He hears from him, being directed by Uddhava, he goes to Maitreya Muni. And from Maitreya, he completely understands the science of self-realization by asking so many questions. In fact, the whole third and fourth canto is nothing but beautiful conversation between Vidura and Maitreya Muni and Uddhava. After that, he comes back to Hastinapur only for one purpose. Very clear. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunanda. He comes for only one purpose. Somehow to deliver Dhritarashtra from a very, very precarious condition that he has put himself into because of his ignorance, or because of his attachment, because of his offensive attitude towards the Pandavas. And he comes and he stays just for a few days. And now Vidura, so sensitive, he's so sensitive not to hurt the sentiments of Yudhishthir Maharaj and not to make him unhappy, he just cannot and therefore does not speak about the disappearance of the Lord. He's so sensitive. Why should I speak this? Anyway, Arjuna is going to come very soon and he's going to get the news. Even Narada doesn't speak. Narada Muni also doesn't speak. So why unnecessarily? Anyway, it's going to happen. Anyway, he's going to come to know. Why speak ill of all these kind of people? Let him hear. He doesn't. But the same Vidura, who is super sensitive about not to hurt the sentiments of such an exalted personality like Maharaj Yudhishthir, is harsh. Is super harsh. Can you imagine? Dhritarashtra, the eldest at that time amongst Kripacharya and others, and his wife and all the Pandavas and the other people, remaining people, all these people were sitting. Prabhupada writes, when Vidura was giving the lecture, everyone in the palace was present. Very, very powerfully, very, very attentively hearing. And actually Vidura performs a surgery. Subtle surgery. Heart surgery of Dhritarashtra. Like a surgeon, he walks in and the palace is just like an operating table. And his scalpel is his words. And how precisely he enters first, one by one, removing the illusion of Dhritarashtra. In terms of its influence of how forgetful are you of the eternal time factor or the power of time factor. When a person is absorbed in illusion, one thing he misses out is in the influence of time. time is passing away and he doesn't realize. The second thing is, because he's absorbed, he becomes attached. That's what Dhritarashtra had, unfortunately, ended up himself doing that. He was attached to a peaceful condition, a peaceful situation, royal opulence, very submissive, respectful person like Yudhishthir to take care of him. Very peaceful mind, old, blind. He had become complacent because of that kind of attachment. And instead of depending on the Supreme Lord, you start depending on other things other than the Lord. So in terms of dependence, in terms of attachment, in terms of losing the importance of time, this was his disease. And therefore, same Vidura, who is so sensitive not to hurt the sentiment of Yudhishthir, speaks such harsh words. Can you imagine in an assembly directly speaking to Dhritarashtra, such a respectful elderly brother, that Grihapalavat, you are like a household dog eating the remnants from the hands of Bhima? Till now the king could have meant Yudhishthir and also. But here it is very specific. This is like the final surgery. You know, whatever remnants were there, that also he removed. No tumor should be left. That's a perfect surgeon. A good surgeon leaves no chance of again the disease growing. So he does a thorough surgery. That's too much, because Bhima was a person who killed Dhritarashtra's all the 100 sons. Especially his two dearmost sons, Duryodhana and Dushasana. It's amazing. It's an act of compassion. Vidura, all the way, had no interest in coming back to Hastinapur, which he had left for good. He loved Dhritarashtra as much as he loved anyone else in the palace, including the Pandavas. But it manifested in different ways. His love for the Pandavas, who were helpless when Pandu died, was to give them all protection and to maintain them and make sure that they are properly provided for whatever their needs are. And his love for Dhritarashtra was to keep on giving him good advice in spite of whether he received it or not, without any hesitation. Irrespective of who considered what. And his love for Duryodhan was to chastise him again and again and again till he understood or whatever happened. So if we see in the lives of these great devotees of the Lord, who are completely beyond the three modes of material nature, being completely self-realized, and having such deep love for the Supreme Lord, and simply wanting to act in a way that is pleasing to the Lord, externally their dealings with different living entities may manifest in absolutely contradictory ways. But the underlying principle behind that is the same. How can I best serve this person? Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, the goal of human life is to develop love for Krishna. And there are three stages of love of God. Kanishta, Madhyama and Uttama. Kanishta means very, very superficial, very low level. Where me and the Lord, that's all. We think I love God and God loves me, irrespective of who considers what. That's very superficial, may not sustain for long. Unless we move to the next stage, that is a Madhyama Adhikari. Ishvaretad Adhineshu Balisheshu Dushachucha प्रेम मैत्री कृपा उपेक्षा यह करोति समध्यम. द सेम लव ऑफ गॉड इन रिलेशनशिप विद द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड मैनिफेस्ट एज सरेंडर एंड सर्विस. द सेम लव फॉर कृष्णा मैनिफेस्ट्स एज डेवलपिंग मैत्री और फ्रेंडशिप विद द डिवोटीज बिकॉज कृष्णा लव्स द डिवोटीज. साधवो हृदय मह्यम साधूना हृदय तो अहम मदन्यत्तेन जानाति नाहम तेभ्यो मनागपि. द हार्ट ऑफ कृष्णा इन द हार्ट ऑफ कृष्णा ओनली डिवोटीज आर इन द हार्ट ऑफ कृष्णा एंड कृष्णा इज इन द हार्ट ऑफ द डिवोटीज. सो इफ यू लव समवन हाउ कैन यू हर्ट हिम स्पेशली हिज हार्ट व्हाट्स मोस्ट डियर टू हिम दैट्स वर्स्ट. Physical kind of hurting someone is insignificant in comparison to hurting the person's heart. It's like piercing a knife through and through. So if you love the Lord, but minimize or criticize or blaspheme the devotees who are sincerely trying, then that's not love. And kripa, the mission of the Lord is to simply, in fact, the whole purpose of creation is only one. How to bring every living entity back home, back to Godhead. That's the mission of the Lord. That's the only reason why he comes. And he sends his empowered personalities. So to assist in that mission, which is like the headache of the Lord. If you love someone, you have to relieve his headache. Transcendental headache. And so, assisting through showing compassion. And if you love someone, he has wonderful qualities, and someone ignorantly, foolishly try to criticize or blaspheme, and if you simply hear and don't react, then actually you have no love. And therefore, upeksha. Of course, a devotee cannot start blaspheming or hating or something, but respectful distance, upeksha, indifference towards them. So externally, it manifests as four different ways, but internally it's the same thing. It's only one principle. Parasa shakti vividhaiva shuyate. There's one energy acting in various ways. Similarly, this energy of love manifesting in so many ways. What is that? Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Shakti, Eka. The same energy for Srishti, Pralaya, and Sadhana. Similarly, the same love manifests in various ways. So by studying the lives of these great exalted personalities who are absolutely beyond the three modes of material nature and their dealings in relationship with different living entities, one can get an inkling of what the Lord's activity truly must be. And in this way, actually, it will not at all be difficult for us to understand the impartiality of the Lord. Otherwise, we may intellectually speak, but deep inside, when something happens to us or someone very near to us, we may actually question. We may actually question. Does really God exist? And if he exists, is he really impartial? So therefore, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavatam is nothing but the law, the transcendental activities of the Lord and the transcendental activities of his pure devotees in relationship with the Lord, in relationship with other living entities, and relationship amongst themselves. Pure devotees of the Lord, how they actually relate. So by simply studying this and trying to the best of our ability, trying to go deeper into this subject matter, gradually, bhaktir bhavati naishthiki, then that nishtha will come when anarthas will go away. This misunderstanding is due to anarthas. Anartho pashamam sakshat bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janato vidvan chakri sattva samhidam. Therefore, Vyasadeva compiled this literature. So that simply by hearing, devotion to the Lord is awakened, and a byproduct of that is anartho pashamam. all the anarthas, upashamam, all the doubts will go away. And then it will be an irrevocable fact. We know that in all circumstances, the Lord is impartial, and simply everything that he does is simply an exhibition of his pure love for us. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. There is one question we can take otherwise. You're raising your hand? You're? Okay. I just thought you just... Krishna is self-satisfied, yeah.
And he was saying that Krishna has everything except for one thing, that is our love. So does this statement have some limitation?
What is the statement? Krishna has?
Krishna has everything apart from our love. That's why we're here in the material world, because of our free will. We decided to enjoy without him. So that's one thing he doesn't have. Is that right? Or did I misunderstood?
What's the choice? You serve his external energy or internal energy? It's just like parents go and leave their children in a park, well-protected park, and giving them the choice to play around. There are choices. You can play the seesaw, or you can play the swing, or you can play here. But there is a well-protected place where you can do what you want. But still, in that sense, Vedvyas, what did he see? Bhakti yogena manasi samyak prani apashyat purusham purnam maya chatad apashrayam. He saw the supreme absolute truth and all his energies fully under his control. See, this is an intellectual way of rationally trying to understand Krishna. That's why it is achintya bheda bheda. Does he not have? Yes. But he doesn't have. No. That freedom is there. We offer it to Krishna or we don't. Still we are serving him. Still we are within him. Within his domain. Still Krishna is hankering. He's not satisfied. He's hankering for the love. Bhaktiya tushyati kevalam nachagunai bhakti priyo madhava. But is he seeking something outside of himself? That's also his Ladini Shakti. Wherever anyone has any love of God, it's simply an insignificant tiny portion of Srimati Radharani's mercy. Who is internal energy? Who is non-different from Krishna in that sense? Radha, Krishna, Pranaya, Vikriti. Radha. Who is Radha? Krishna, Pranaya, Vikriti, Ladini, Shaktir, Asmad. So in that sense, yes, Krishna feels himself incomplete in a very inconceivable way. He told Haridas Thakur, Haridas, if you go away, it will be shunyaitam jagat sarvam. Actually, Mahaprabhu felt like that. Every day after Jagannath's darshan, he would go and meet Haridas. He would meet Gadadhar Pandit. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually felt that every single one of his devotees are as dear to me. And I will feel a big void without you. And was Haridas, did Haridas take it seriously? He said, my Lord, if an ant dies, who cares? I'm an insignificant person. So who is right? Is Mahaprabhu speaking lie? Or is Haridas Thakur speaking lie? One of them has to be wrong. You know, if you speak to some intellectual scholar, they say either it is some superficial dealings or one of them has to be wrong. Mahaprabhu is saying the whole world will be a void without you. And Haridas is saying, come on, my Lord. Millions and millions more worthy to sit on my head. Who am I? Actually, it's a fact. Sometimes we keep on walking and so many ants are killed. Do we notice? Is there a difference to the world if an ant dies? Billions die anyway. Haridas felt like that. So that is achintya. Yes, Krishna is self-sufficient, but he's always hankering. He can't even, he understands everything, but he can't understand Radharani's love for him. Do you understand? I don't. I'm speaking, but I don't. But I'm trying to understand, like a bird trying to fathom the limitless sky. Like child, whatever we have heard, we're trying to just kind of repeat, and trying to intellectually adjust so that we can go on pursuing. One day we will realize, hopefully. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Thai Gaur Premanandi.